Yeah, so I thought we would go round robin on what courage means to you. This is the Wikipedia version of courage. So I know we decided not to prep and just kind of spend this time to learn something at least. So let's start with Vinny. What is courage to you?
Well, just saying that normally it would be applied or referred to be even a useful concept. I think it has to be applied just to an action that itself has some merit, somehow a just action, somehow a moral action. And then secondly, you'll hear in both senses, and I think both have their place. Kind of one is in which has to do with like overcoming internal reservations against doing something, like overcoming your fears, feeling the fear and doing something anyway. So manifesting courage in that respect. And another has to do with external factors, such as you might experience punishment by somebody or some sort of retribution or something, but it's the right thing to do, so you do it anyway. And you're willing to take risks and risk being your risk having something adverse happen to you because the morality of the action outweighs, your concern for your own safety, I guess, your own well-being in that respect. And so, and it's I don't think both the internal and the external conditions have to be present, but I think you're going to see it one or the other usually, at least. I mean, at least one of them will be present.
Well,
So mine would be a little more shorter. So either the physical example pops out to me. So someone is getting picked on, bullied, or robbed, etc. So you intervene. So you're risking a physical harm. And then the other would be to you're standing up for some type of ideal. So you're there's something going on at work, and you're standing up. Maybe you're risking your career, or you're doing it in front of at school or wherever the venue is, that you're going to take a stand that is going to maybe be some alienation or ostracism or something like that.
Chris?
I think both Vinny and Phil hit it on the head, so I have nothing to add to that. You still
And how
didn't give
about
my
you,
10
Chris?
seconds anyway.
How about you, Chris and Kay?
Let's ask another question. What moment in your life
Wait, don't
do
you
you
have to
feel?
answer that, Chris with a K?
I'm sorry, I apologize. I think courage means, I agree with you, Benny. Very eloquent. Courage means standing up for your ideals, whatever you believe in. Having the fortitude of spirit and body to, defend those ideals, whatever it takes. So let's go round robin again. Think about a moment in your life when you had to have courage. And maybe talk about it and whoever wants to go first, I don't, yeah.
I'll go. So this is pretty trivial. It doesn't seem like I didn't can believe. But my first thought is my first W-2 job. I was 16, and I was working at a car wash. And I remember this guy. He didn't like me for whatever reason, and he. I'm trying to remember exactly. I don't remember even remember what started it, but he ended up. I think push like I was drinking something. I think he. Swatted the cup away, and then so I immediately pushed him, and then we became like really good friends. So it was like he gave me we went to a party the next weekend, and just the fact that I stood up for myself, he really respected that. So again, I didn't get hit or anything. It was something very minor, and I wasn't protecting anybody, but that's one moment that just came to my mind.
Your first what job? What did you say? Your W? What was the first part?
Well, my first technical job, I was 13. I was mowing the yard of my backyard neighbor, but this was my first W-2 job. I was working at a car wash, so. So I'm finished, Chris, with a K if you want to resume. I think
I'm still thinking. This is a hard question.
Or Vinny or Chris.
Yeah, courageous is a very difficult question.
Vinny, do you want to go?
Nothing comes to mind immediately. I mean, I have to think about it also. It's kind of hard to do this one without any preparation now.
Right.
Chris with a C.
Well. Well, you know, how's it, can I make a suggestion? Because I think there's also an element of modesty here. So instead of just saying an example where you were courageous, how about just an example in your life of courage, maybe a friend, a family member, I guess even a movie or something like that, but perhaps something more personal, but it doesn't have to be you that did something courageous, maybe a family member or a friend.
Exactly. I turned it personal. So let's switch it to impersonal. How about a movie where courage was displayed and you resonated with it? I'll start. Braveheart.
I was thinking the same thing.
I thought you might say that.
I knew you were going
to
say
that. I respect William Wallace.
Yeah.
He had courage.
I never even saw the movie, but I thought you might say that. Well, it's kind of, yeah.
Well, it was a movie, but it was based on a true story. So the man was tortured, disemboweled even, and he didn't give up his ideals. I mean, I can't imagine any more bravery than that.
Yeah. Do you want to take a 5-minute break? Bio break?
Really? Okay. We just got started.
okay.
Well, how about you take your bio break and I can, I mean, are these questions, are they going too quickly? Or Chris with a C, do you want to tackle?
I have no more content than this.
No, let's do the bio break because we don't want to hold on to that. Yeah, okay. We should take the break.
All right,
I'm
pausing. Zoom. Sure.
Yeah. You can't compare courage. Come on, it's not quantifiable. Both, you know, Martin Luther King and Gandhi were very courageous.
Okay, that's anybody else have an answer? <That's>
Trick question.
So it's rhetorical or okay, what's the next question?
Oh, I would argue neither one is courageous.
Okay, well, that's a controversial answer.
Yeah, I'll pick a devil's advocate position then.
Okay, yeah, good.
Which is neither is controversial because both were pursuing self-interest. So that I think self-interest obviates courage.
And why would you say that their self-interest is
because they don't like the way they're being treated. Okay. So it's, you know, if I don't like the way I'm being treated, and because you're throwing popcorn at me at the movie theater, I tell you to stop, it might show some sort of, gumption that I'm willing to tell you to stop. I don't think it shows particular courage I'm willing to stop. I think what show courage is if you were throwing popcorn at somebody else.
Well, you're saying that it's, you're saying it's, they're showing self-interest because, I mean, it's not necessarily for themselves. I mean, they took risks. They both got assassinated and they both probably expected to be assassinated actually. But you're talking about they were self-interest because they pursued only justice for their own people and not for other.
They pursued justice for themselves.
You can't
separate them from the abusive situation which they were trying to rectify.
Well, I mean, but for themselves, I mean, they both got assassinated and they both did things that led to that. They both expected, I think, to be assassinated. And I know Martin Luther King.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they may have found it so distasteful to accept the current circumstance that they had no choice.
Well, but then that just reduces to everything is selfish because you just do it to make.
That's just, it's a position to consider. I mean, let's, I'm trying to think of a good situation. If you're pinching somebody and you're pinching them hard and they tell you to, they scream and tell you to stop, or they even hit, you know, strike you or push your hand away. I mean, was that an evidence of courage? What is evidence that they just were very uncomfortable? You know, it's been said that even a mouse, if you corner him, will bare his teeth and prepare to fight. So, I mean, so that's the controversial position I'll take. Chris, you got a response? Since you chose that they were both courageous.
I texted in the chat. That's all life. If you're threatening their life, they will respond. I mean, they're trying to defend their life. Phil?
But do you have to be courageous if they have to be courageous if they're trying to defend their life? Or is that just defense?
No, I agree. Yeah. Our life is the only thing we have.
Well, Chris, then what would be courageous then? Like, can we go back to, we just revisit the original definition? Because then I'm not sure what you consider courageous. Chris with a C.
Yeah, I think, again, this is all, it's all semantics, it's all wordplay, nothing, this isn't really serious conversation, but I would say that I would tend to try to reserve the word courageous for acts that people take that are, as you said, Vinny, are in pursuit of a higher objective, higher calling, which I think tends not to be one directly attached to my own self-interest, because I think that's more of self-defense and self-preservation. And I think that those are good things as well. Self-defense, self-preservation, when one is, it has no reason to, when one is in the right, or when one has not done any, is not, you know, committed an offense against another person, and one is simply being the object of someone else's mistreatment, it's perfectly appropriate and ethical and moral to defend oneself in most cases. But I think that it doesn't necessarily equate to morality. I mean, Hitler actually justified his actions in saying that, one, they had been mistreated in the Versailles Treaty, wasn't it, after World War One? Two, that he said that the Jews had stabbed him in the back, right? And he said that it was, you know, they're going to be courageous and fight back against this mistreatment by the, you know, global community. And by this, you know, Jewish conspiracy, which of course, you know, he created.
Well, yeah.
I don't think that was courageous.
Well, that's what I mean. When I started, I was saying the courageous has to do with it's not that you believe that what you're fighting for is good. I mean, what you're fighting for has to be good for it to be courageous. It's not just that. Hitler thought he was doing something good. So. Yeah.
He's, I mean, you know, I think it's more courageous when you do something. I don't know if you get, you know, he says, Chris says it's not quantifiable. So this is problematic if I say it this way, that it's more courageous to stand to take the same action if you don't have a self-interest attached to it.
Well, then, okay. Then by that, I think if you are going to use that metric, then I think Gandhi would have to be the more courageous because he had a cushy life in Britain. I mean, there was some discrimination perhaps, but it was nothing like what he fought against when he went on his quest. I mean, he went to India to fight that battle. But
this
is a
horrible discussion. Sorry. I think I'm like making Martin Luther King and Gandhi compete. That's not my
You started this, Chris.
Yeah, your question.
No, hold on. They're both beautiful souls. Okay.
You know, but see, here's the thing, Chris. I would argue that both of them probably felt a level of psychic pain beyond which the average person felt in the circumstances that they were in. Not because they were personally always the butt of what they considered mistreatment or abuse, but rather the very notion that that thing would go unopposed caused them so much psychic pain.
But that would apply to any act then. I mean, let's say you're not doing it for your own people, so to speak, and you're doing it for Palestinians and you're not Palestinian, you could just say, well, you're just doing that because it alleviates the psychic pain you feel at the injustice that Palestinians—
No, I don't think that's the case. I think some people not feeling much psychic pain just say, that's wrong, I won't stand for it. I don't think they have to feel pain over it. I think they can simply say, it's just reprehensible, and I want to do something about it.
Well, you're positing these internal states, but what evidence then do you have? What behavioral evidence do you have for that? Then it just, I mean, you can speculate that they were just motivated by these things, but that just has to do with motivation anyway. I don't see what that has to do with ethics really or justice.
No, I'm suggesting that into the definition of courage that there's a component of lack of self-interest. So, I mean, these conversations, they can't be interesting if we all just agree, can they?
Yeah.
Right.
No, I
agree.
No, I applaud your taking the other, I mean, on the question such as, was it Martin and Gandhi?
Let's propose with another person. I'll propose an alternative. I'll propose what's the guy? His last name was Brown.
There's a lot of Browns. Just,
quick question.
John Brown.
Fuck. But the abolitionist, or
yeah.
What about him?
No self-interest. No direct self-interest.
But going back to your definition, if he had psychic pain, then he's just being selfish, right? Because he's annoyed with this.
I think the greater his psychic pain, the less courage it took. Okay. Because if psychic pain is your motivation, you need less courage. But I suspect that he was pretty courageous.
Well, initially I was going to take the contra position because it does make a more interesting discussion. But back in my 20s, I was obsessed with Abraham Lincoln. I read as much as I could on him. And there's some specials now on CNN. And I just remember reading where he was all dressed up in his suit and everything. And he was on the way to some courthouse. And a pig was like caught in a fence. And he had to get in the mud and like his entire courthouse for the day. You know, he's just wasn't going to get any work done. And then someone said to him that, wow, that was so selfless of you to free that pig. And he was like, well, no, that man, that was a very selfish act because I would have felt horrible the whole day. So according to your Abraham Lincoln, I think would agree, Chris, with your definition. But if I were to take the opposite viewpoint, I think it's just the results, if you're going to take on this huge establishment of racism or whatever you're going to do and all the reputational risk and everything else, assassination, etc., no matter how much psychic pain you're going through, that you're still going through huge duress. And so if I argue the other viewpoint, I'd say that that's still being courageous. But
yeah. You know, I it's funny. It's a very self-effacing statement that Lincoln makes, which is part of his genius, right? Because being self-effacing is much, much more popular sort of thing to be than to take credit for, you know, for saying, well, you know what, I'm a good man. I could not let that pig suffer all day long. Okay. That was the other thing he could have said. And I think he was a wise guy and he said the wiser thing to say, but I think in reality, Lincoln probably was motivated by not wanting that pig to suffer.
I think he's such a fascinating person that he came, he had less than a 1 year of formal schooling. his dad was not literate that I can recall. He would slap Lincoln whenever he was reading a book instead of doing his physical chores. His mom died when he was, I think, less before 10 years old. The amount of everything he went through, and he had, anyway, so kind of.
You know what? It's interesting, though. Phil, he talked about his father. He described the time he left his father as his emancipation.
Yeah, he did not like his dad at all.
So I think, you know, so I was listening to someone, you know, one of those C-SPAN, I was flipping channels, and there was a C-SPAN discussion of Lincoln. And one of the authors postulated that Lincoln felt the way he did and acted the way he did in political life because of that early, his early experience of feeling like he was a slave to his father. And so he may have had a level of identification with people who are being forced to work without compensation. That was really directly associated with the fact that his father wanted him to work all the time. Okay. Yeah. So, the fact that he used the term emancipation then and again later on is interesting that he chose the same word. So maybe Lincoln had a lot of psychic pain over slavery because he felt he had been in slavery.
But well, going back to Chris with a K, you said it's not quantifiable. So all of these questions are basically moot then, right? Because you're asking us to choose. Chris
left. he left us with a picture of himself.
Are you ever going to come back live camera or? All right. I guess he's another bio.
He's mad. Are you mad? He's mad at us, man. I think he's mad. Or fell asleep.
No bio break. Well, the discussion is interesting, but I'll probably have to wrap up in maybe 10
minutes. I apologize. I need to use the restroom.
Okay.
Okay.
I heard Chris with a K, and I was like,
oh. You got to rush back in there.
Exactly.
The only thing I said was, I guess your question is moot because your definition is you can't quantify courage. So then
how... Plato just, discuss courage in the dialogues. And my hope for us is that we can explore history. Not just like a pine, but like really study this.
But you're saying it's not quantifiable, but you're asking us to choose among two different people.
Actually asking us to study history.
Okay. That's good. Okay. That's fair.
Well, what's the next, what's the next question? I went on a tangent on Lincoln, so. You can bring us back on topic.
What movie where courage was shown?
I thought we covered that with Braveheart.
A second movie.
Didn't Denzel do a movie where he was a colonel investigating a lady who ends up like a pilot, helicopter pilot, and they're saying terrible things about her, but he finds out in fact she was heroic. What was that movie called?
Courage Under Fire.
Courage Under Fire.
Yeah. Matt Damon. It's in the name. Matt Damon did not do CGI. He his physical structure, that is an accurate portrayal. So when he did the movie The Martian, that was just CGI. He didn't lose any weight. But in that movie, he went down to he went extreme levels there for I think that was one of his first parts, big parts. But yeah, I enjoyed that movie.
Does anybody play chess or poker?
Very badly the first, never the second.
Okay. Yeah, very badly for chess and not, I don't even play poker that well, but I do like poker.
Okay, ignore that question, please.
No, we might understand enough for the question. What's the question?
The question is, I think, do you guys, does anyone want to play? That's the follow-up question.
Yeah.
It's just,
he put that in the text.
It's quite a time commitment for, especially for poker, but.
Yeah.
Chris, I don't know if you're disappointed, but I kind of think we kind of hit some interesting ground here on this conversation. Yeah. Not that we settled anything.
I find it interesting.
No, and I'm glad Chris with the CE, I like the challenge. I like there's some good challenging questions there. So it's good that we take
I'm pretty good on warfare stuff, and we had a class on it. I remember vaguely there was a question of, if you see the enemy soldier taking a bath in the bathtub, can you shoot him? I mean, so you have all kinds of interesting questions you get to ask when it comes to the morality of warfare, which I don't know that really apply to anything. But you asked those questions in class.
Last time we talked about strategy, would you consider yourself a master at strategy?
Who, me?
Yes.
Military strategy?
Just strategy in general.
I would say I'm not a master, but I think as you get older, you get better and better, right? The more you see, the better you understand. I think you begin to understand what are the, I know, here's what I think. If I think I've understood two things as I've gotten older. One is this very important thing of identifying what they call center of gravity. You know, what is it that you have to do to win the war? For example, George Washington won the war because he ran away from the British. Had they defeated his army, they would have won. He kept running, he won. And then the other thing is recognizing pressure points. You know, what is the thing that the enemy cannot tolerate? So that if you can apply pressure to it, you know, I think this in any kind of, you know, human affairs, this is the case. Sometimes it comes down to who can stand more pain. And I think if you take a position that you're going to take more pain and you can cause the other side to suffer pain, and when the other side is not interested in suffering any pain, then you can be successful in almost any negotiation or any conflict if you can stay alive. But I think that's it's something that I've learned over the years. It's really important, especially when you're dealing with power, is that power always wins unless it oversteps. If it oversteps and you can really make the case that it's overstepping, it's, you know, then you have some leverage against power. Otherwise you can't beat power.
What was that second thing you said, that if you can take the pain? Is that what you said?
Yeah, sometimes you get into a situation where, you know, what happens quite often is somebody who's used to stepping on people, because they do that quite frequently in their position, or that people have, you know, kind of take it, step on you or step on somebody you know, and expect to get away with it. And then when you resist that becomes uncomfortable suddenly for the other side, the person who's doing the stepping. It's always uncomfortable for the person who's the steppee, right? The stepper is not uncomfortable unless the steppee says, no, I'm not gonna let you step on me. Right there is the beginning of discomfort for the stepper. And if the steppee can take enough pain in this situation, eventually the stepper will say, you know what, I thought this was gonna be easy to just step on you, and now you've made me uncomfortable in stepping on you, so I really don't wanna do the stepping anymore. And they will retreat. So sometimes, although they're more powerful, the reality is they're just less willing to take the pain, the discomfort of the situation.
Can I respond to that, Chris?
Yeah.
You motivated me to respond. In Gene Roddenberry's future, nobody steps on anybody else.
Right.
We're all equal. We're free human beings. We're equal.
Right.
That's my vision. And that's Gene Roddenberry's vision.
It'd be nice. And when it happens, call me.
Well, Chris, you have a lot of knowledge on with military. Who are like a couple strategists that you admire, just as far as their ability to outwit the opponent? I don't know if you want to define it as lack of resources, like Washington. Mm-hmm. What the British had, how many more people? Like, so are there a couple other people besides Washington?
I need to confess, first of all, that I'm a very poor military historian. You know, it's funny thing. I'll take quick story. I took a couple honors classes at West Point, and I thought, oh, these classes are great because they're more, you know, more thoughtful, you know, like, you know, and it's not so much rote memorization, you know. And so I saw that there was they sent me a letter or something, say, would you like to take the honors military history class? And I thought, oh yeah, I'll just sign up for that. It's going to be a lot more interesting. Well, and then I got to class and the professor started having conversations with the students about these battles and things and what happened. I mean, the significance of the battle. I didn't even know what the battle was, okay? So I realized, and then I thought, realized one day, like, wait a minute, I'm in an advanced military history class at West Point. What am I doing, right? I mean, there are people who've been reading about this stuff since they were 15, you know? And I didn't know this stuff. So I actually had to go borrow the regular class books so I could just read the basic history of what happened. Right, to begin to catch up. And it was the worst decision I ever made as far as taking a class where I thought I should be in the class. I had no business in that class, zero business in that class. So I, at this point, I'm still very bad on that stuff. So I don't want to suggest I'm very good at it at all. But I do know that, you know, having taken a couple of those classes, you have to have picked up a little bit. So, but I will tell you, there's one interesting thing about Napoleon. If you look at Napoleon, he was a terrible strategist and tactician, but he had this one really great general. And so Napoleon would get himself in jams all the time. And then this just general would like march his troops like, you know, 90 miles in 4 days and show up just in time to save Napoleon, right? And so over and over again, this guy saved Napoleon until the very end. And that's when Napoleon lost. So that's the guy who gets the credit for Napoleon's successes, and I can't remember his name, but it was this general who was always able to save Napoleon's bacon.
So is that a canard that I thought Napoleon was supposed to be this military genius where it's someone else bailing him out behind the scenes?
I think that's what actually happened, you know. But you can see how it worked for Napoleon, right? You put yourself in a position that's impossible, then the enemy is going to behave in a way that's consistent with the fact that they know you're in an impossible position. And then this guy is going to show up at the last second. So now they're in a position that's they're not prepared for this guy to show up, right? So I think that's why, you know, he had these amazing successes, but it was that one guy. And I mean, I don't think that's something, you know, that I came up with. I think that that's kind of standard understanding. But, you know, no one knows who the second most famous guy is, right? No one knows that stuff. And I've forgotten after 30 years. But I think, you know, I mean, there's stuff like that that's worth knowing about, I think. But I don't know enough military history. I would embarrass the institution if I talked about it.
Yeah, I don't know that too much either. But I think someone said what Hitler was a good military strategist, but he doesn't seem that. I think he was brilliant in as far as obtaining power, but as far as the fact that he invaded Russia in the winter, that was pretty dumb.
He was charismatic and attractive, and he knew the German language very well. I like studying evil. I mean, like, if anybody in history is a demon, it's probably Hitler.
I think he comes up on our podcast way too much. Too many. But I guess there it's such a salient example of. How about Vinny? Do you have a strategist that you are impressed with? And then you can, Chris, with a K, you can respond. Someone that you admire strategy-wise?
Didn't we discuss strategy already? I haven't even mind. I haven't really been thinking about strategy.
It doesn't have to be military. It can be political or something else. I think Chris with a K kind of brought it up, if I'm not mistaken. And then we could wrap up here in a few minutes.
I don't really have anything in mind for strategy. I wasn't even thinking about that.
Well, yeah, Vinny, just respond to the original kind of thread.
What was the original question? What was the original question?
Who's more courageous? Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr.?
I'm not going to say that they're not quantifiable, but I mean, I would say that particular comparison, I mean, they're both so courageous in this. I mean, they both, it's not a very precise quantification. So I would say they're comparable. I'll just leave it at that. I would say they're comparable. I disagreed with Chris Reeve, and I don't know how much he was playing a devil's advocate on it, but I disagreed with that. Chris, I don't know. Chris with a K, I don't know why you're bringing this up again, because you didn't even like your own question. You asked it, and you said you were just like, no, they're both beautiful souls. So you were just like starting the fire. So I guess you're just doing it again, stoking the fire. But anyway, I won't go as far as saying it's not quantifiable, but I would say for those two, I'd say they're roughly on a par. I mean, it's more of a, it's, you might look at, see some, as far as, it wouldn't be quantity in the sense I put like numerical values and say, you know, this person is 6.85, has courageous value, and this person is 10.84. It'd be more like stratification or something like that, and also qualitative difference. But I'd say both, you know, they would be in roughly the same same category as far as our same strategy.
Yeah, can we stop the video and recording and then just chat about our plan?
Yeah, I'll stop. I'm stopping right now. I mean, you asked about cowardice. I'm stopping. I'll say Neville Chamberlain is a coward.
Sorry, Phil. Yeah. We're going to continue the recording.